This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to Both the Pod.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of What the Puck. It is a Washington Capitals podcast, which means it's a podcast about your 2018 Stanley Cup champions. Thank you all for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube. Well, this team likes to keep things interesting, doesn't it? You gotta give them that. This is a fun team to watch because you really don't know who's going to show up and what's going to happen, and they like to keep you on your toes. But what an up and down two games that we get to talk about here. Joining me, as always, to talk all about it, Coach Dan. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, man?
I'm feeling good, especially after that Tampa Bay Lightning game. I don't think I'd feel as good after that Minnesota Wild game.
But
it seems like TJ Oshie said that there was a team meeting, and I got to say, I mean, they came out firing on all cylinders against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They came ready to play, and they made sure that they got that first goal of the game. Still a close game. It was 4-3 to end up, but they made, I want to curse here, but it's a family show. They made for darn sure that they were getting that first goal against Tampa.
Looking at how they've been playing lately, when I saw that they had had a team-only meeting, I was like, yeah, that makes sense, because clearly the coaching staff, like, they're just not listening. And whenever a team has a player-only meeting, in my opinion, I don't feel like that's a fair reflection upon the coaching staff, because I've coached before, and it's always been the middle school or early high school level. So
that's where you got your name.
It is in no way even remotely compared to professional level. But as a coach, you can only do so much, right? When I'm coaching middle schoolers, it's very much more at the basic level, trying to get them to understand the game, and given I'm coaching soccer, but getting them to understand the game and then trying to do some bit more with it. When you're coaching professionals, you can only do so much. But there's an interesting line that I can kind of compare to the situation. But I don't know if you've watched Ted Lasso before. Amazing show.
Don't have Apple TV.
All right, we'll talk about that later. You can't borrow mine because my 3-month free thing for getting a new iPhone is now over. So sorry, dude. So talk to someone else who gets a new phone. Anyways, there's a line in the show where Ted is talking to played by Jason Sudeikis. He's talking to his son, and he talks about he used to be a football coach in America. Now he's coaching soccer in Europe. And he's talking about how the differences between coaching football and soccer is that you don't really have a lot of time to talk to your players once the game starts, right? In soccer, you can yell at them from the sidelines, but especially in professional soccer, if you take them off, they're done. So you don't have an opportunity to talk to them during the game. You have to give them all the instruction ahead of time during practice before the game starts. And at that point, it's really up to them to make it work. In American football, there's plenty of time where players are coming off the field and you're talking to them. Guys are looking at tape and watching what just happened. And I mean, even nowadays, there's so much information that's readily available for football players. Hockey, I feel like, is somewhere in between, where you do have them come back to the bench and they are watching things live from when they've been played and when things have happened. But it's still like you can only do so much as a coach. So when you have a players-only meeting like this, it is, in my opinion, 100% a reflection upon the players and that they're not doing what the coaching staff has asked them to do. And when you look at games like that against Tampa or some of the other games that they have played recently where they've played really well, I mean, they went and I'm trying to find it on the schedule. Where is it that they had a really good win? I mean, they won in Carolina. They beat up on Carolina again. No, I'm not the same one. They won in Carolina and they beat up on Carolina at the beginning of March. I mean, this is a team that has the capability of playing well. The question is, why aren't they? Is it the coaching staff or is it the players? A lot of times you'll see teams will get rid of the coaching staff, and you and I can discuss that depending on how the rest of the season goes. But a lot of times it's easier to get rid of the coaching staff because it's less expensive in a way, right? Like making trades and cutting players is different. You cut somebody, you're going to have that dead cap hit. You trade players, the other team has to accept they want someone who, if they're not doing well, you're not going to get much in return. It's easier to get rid of a coaching staff and try something different. But if you have a players-only meeting, clearly something is going wrong in that locker room, and it's down to the players to play well, right? You can only set your guys up to do so well before you're like, all right, it's on you now. Make it happen. Laviolette's not putting on the skates and pads and getting out there and trying to score goals. It's up to the team to be able to make things happen. So I'm glad they did it, but now I want to see the consistency. Anybody can go and have a meeting where you're yelling at each other and being, you know, we need to play better and lots of F-bombs and things that I'm sure are going on in that locker room, especially back when Boudreaux was coach. But if you can't continue it and you can't have that consistency, then there's a reason the Islanders are you know, coming up on your butt. They're in your rearview mirror in terms of making the playoffs. So the playoffs are not guaranteed for this team. They've got to up their play, and the schedule's not getting any easier, especially over the next week. You've got one game right now over the next two games over the next five that are against teams that are likely not making, that are not making the playoffs.
You got a big 4-point game coming up on Saturday up against the Penguins. That's a
big
one. You
got 2 4-point games because you're not only looking at, you know, in your division, but you're also looking at Boston. You know, you're looking at a team that's likely bouncing back and forth between Tampa in terms of the wild card spot. You know, if you want to get yourself into a potential, I mean, right now you pick your poison. You want Florida, you want Carolina. If you're going to be in the wild card spot, so you got, they got a bunch of 4-point games coming up. You got Tampa, you got Boston, you got Pittsburgh, you got the Rangers. You know, they're a little bit ahead. They're 10 points up, but that's an easy gap if they start to struggle a bit and the Caps go on a bit of a winning streak. There's a lot of really important games coming up for not only seeding for the playoffs, but just making the freaking playoffs.
Now, these player only meetings, do you think this was, this is a very veteran team. Who do you think is the one kind of calling these meetings? I'm kind of pointing the finger at TJ Oshie.
You see, pointing the finger like, hey, you, stop it.
It was you, wasn't like, it? Well, no, thank you.
You,
thank you so much
son
for doing
of
that.
A... No, if I had to go and I'm looking at, you know, Ovechkin, it looks like, from what we've seen, he's the type of leader that will speak up. But I feel like he does it if it's a last resort. And it's more of, he's more of a lead by example type thing. And that's fine.
Right.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But you need someone that's going to be like a Mike Knuble from years ago. We saw on the, was it 24/7, where he, you know, when they're losing, the Rangers getting blown out, that he was like, we're not having this anymore. Like, this is not happening. And I believe they played better the rest of that game and then went on a bit of a streak after that. But I wouldn't be surprised if, like you said, it was Oshie, if it was Carlson, you know, maybe Backstrom to an extent. I could see someone like, I just Garnet Hathaway step up and say something. You know, some of these older guys who've been playing for a while. But I think if you're looking at two guys that definitely were the ones speaking up, you're looking at an Oshie and you're looking at a Carlson.
Now, I find it kind of interesting that these player-only meetings happen, and also around that same exact time, Laviolette decides, all right, we're going to scratch all the rookies. All the young guns are going away. We're going full veteran. Now, yes, Connor McMichael did play against Tampa, but that's because I believe it was Hathaway had a non-COVID illness right up to game time. So McMichael did get a game in there, but on Sunday against Minnesota, it was all veterans. If you were under the age of like 24, you were not playing in that game. So Connor McMichael, Axel Janssen, Fialbi were healthy scratches. I have to assume if Garney is feeling better on Saturday and Sunday, we probably aren't going to see McMichael back in the lineup. So do you think there's any correlation as to these player-only meetings and with them choosing to go veteran-heavy, or is this more of a prep for the postseason type of deal?
I think it is Laviolette wanting to go with experience. We've seen that McMichael has not gotten the experience that I would imagine as fans we wanted him to get this season. He's not getting a ton of minutes in games, and we're not there in the locker room. We're not necessarily we're not at every practice, so we don't know necessarily why McMichael's not getting more ice time. I don't think it's necessarily that Laviolette doesn't like younger players. He's used a ton of them during the season. I mean, they had what, like 9 to 10 guys that made their NHL debut or have scored their first NHL goals this season.
Right.
So it's not that he doesn't want to use young players. I think he just prefers experience, especially when you're fighting for a playoff spot. You want guys that are going to give you that experience. And it's not like, given he hasn't had a ton of time, but McMichael is lighting up the score sheet. I mean, he's not in any of those conversations in terms of young guys that are tearing it up. So he's got 18 and 64. Now, would he have more points with more ice time? Yeah, probably. You get more opportunities to score, you're probably going to, you know, if you're a halfway decent hockey player, and he definitely is better than a halfway decent hockey player. But he's also a young guy, and I don't think the season necessarily hurts his development to an extent. I don't think being in Hershey would necessarily help him progress, because he's clearly shown that he's better than the AHL. Maybe he's just not ready for the NHL at this point, but earlier in the season and midpoint in the season, it would have been nice for him to get more ice time, to be able to potentially produce more, to learn more, to play with really good players, because maybe that sets him up for an opportunity to be better going towards the postseason or even in the postseason. And you don't have to go out and acquire someone, because you don't have to give up a value in draft capital or whatever, or potential prospects to bring in someone, because you don't think McMichael's ready yet. You know, should they have given him more time? My guess is between Laviolette and GM Brian McClellan thought, you know what, he's just not ready yet. He's not producing at what this team needs to potentially make a run. So we need to go out and get a guy like Marcus Johansson, who's got no points since he's come over, and he's a -4. Even though Laviolette is, you know, he says he likes what he's seen from him. We'll see how that goes, you know. But if I wish they'd given McMichael more time, because this team has to get younger. I'm pretty sure it's still the oldest team, average-wise, the oldest team in the league. And, you know, with time, you're not getting any younger. So having younger players that can produce is important. And maybe it's not this season. You know, then that kind of, what should they have done differently in this offseason? What should they have done differently during the season in terms of different acquisitions, different trades, different moves they should have made to better set themselves up for the future? But when you're looking at a roster where you have to dress 7 defensemen because of a salary cap implications, that's on the general manager. You gave out these contracts, you acquired these players, and you put yourself in a position to not have cap space, so you couldn't dress a full 12 forwards. That's your fault. That's your problem. You know, I don't think that means they don't make the playoffs, but if they lose out, you know, if they miss by 2 points or something, and you go back and you look at a game where they only dressed 11 forwards, honestly, it's probably not because of that, but it does bring up question marks in terms of what comes next for this team. Are they going to go on to win the cup? Maybe. Not according to Paul Bissonnette, but there's a possibility. And at that point, if that goes and it works out, then hey, everything they did worked. But, you know, there's 32 teams and only one gets to win the cup every year. But is this team progressing? Have they set themselves up in the best position to win a cup? This is a team that should be not fighting for the playoffs, but is a playoff guarantee and fighting for a cup. You have one of the best players in the history of the game. You have an amazing, potentially one of the better assist players ever to play in the National Hockey League, and playmakers in Nicholas Backstrom. You've got some very good players on this team. Have you set yourself up to win now, which is what they should be doing? I like that they're not risking the future, because these guys are eventually going to retire or move on. That's just a reality of how it works. But have you set yourself up? That's what the offseason is for. You set yourself up to win now. And I don't know if they've done that. Not based on what we've seen. Is the Tampa Bay game a reality? Or is it just one good win? That remains to be seen. We'll see over the next week or two.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. I'm hoping this is one of those opportunities where it's like peaking at the right moment. They have 12 games left. And from what I saw against Tampa, if they can continue that type of play, they are going to be very difficult to beat in the postseason, because this was a team that came out. I mean, I was shocked. All right, Wednesday nights are usually my wrestling nights. AEW Dynamite, TBS, 8 o'clock, that's what I watch. However, this game started, it said 7:30, but really didn't hit the air until like 7:50, which is really annoying, TNT. Please stop it. But I was, this game started and I was like, holy crap, these guys are flying. Holy crap, look at them go. Oh, they're taking shots on net. Where did this team come from? Holy crap. And it was exciting to watch again. And it was great to see. Yes, during intermissions, because I hate the TNT broadcast team, I did turn on wrestling. But the only guy that I really enjoyed on this TNT broadcast team was Alex Ovechkin, who was pretty much saying that John Carlson goal was a goal while he was watching the iPad in between the benches. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. He's like, hey, let me see what's going on.
Yeah, he's like, no, it's a goal. Goal, his foot's up. See, it's a goal. It's a goal. My favorite part, though, is when the ref says no goal and he looks at the camera and smiles, because that's Ovi – having a good time. And that's Ovi. You can tell on the ice, off the ice, he's enjoying himself. And it might be because his wife is back in town. She was spotted at the game against Tampa. So she's back in the United States. Maybe he's got kind of like that weight off his shoulders about wondering what's happening to his family at the moment. But Ovi's enjoying himself again. I don't think that there is any doubt. There's no doubt in my mind, I should say, that the fact that Ovi's having fun, this team is also doing well. And I think there's definitely a correlation there. However, the one thing we have to worry about 12 games from now, who's the starting goaltender? Once again, here we are. How many weeks into the season are we at this point? 70 some odd games into this season, and we still don't know who the number one goaltender is moving forward. Samsonov had an absolutely fantastic game against Tampa. He had Holtby-esque-like saves up against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Vitek Vanacek is doing himself no favors by the way that he performed on Sunday. He was definitely flustered given the team in front of him was not playing very good hockey. But sometimes when the team in front of you isn't playing well, you need to up your game. And Vitek did not do that. And I liked what Ben Raby said on Caps this morning. Sammy has done nothing for himself to become the number one goaltender. Vitek has done everything to let Sammy become the number one goaltender. It's all on Vitek at this point. If he's not the number one goaltender, it is not like he hasn't been given a shot. He's been given a full month. This is Sammy's first home game. I think John Walton said this is his first home game since like mid-December. I mean, that really says something. He has not played much at all in like a month and a half. But he comes out and he looks brilliant. There's back-to-backs. Obviously, Saturday, Sunday, they're going to be splitting. Do you give Vitek the chance to go up against the Penguins, a team that you are 100% going to have to probably, well, 100% probably doesn't make any sense. A team that you will most likely have to go through to get onto the Stanley Cup Finals? Or do you have him play against the Bruins, another team potentially that you could see in the Stanley Cup Finals? I don't know.
I mean, I think interesting you bring up the Ben Raby comment, because I like the one from Tarik El-Bashir, and I may have this backwards, so I apologize if I got it wrong, but he said something along the lines of Vanacek can make the stops but not the saves. Samsonov can make the saves but not the stops.
You put those two guys together, we got a great goaltender.
50% of a NHL goalie in both of them right now, and that's a problem. And it goes back to the offseason. It goes back to the regular season in terms of what they were prepared to do, and I think having two young guys that didn't necessarily show you historically that they're ready to be the starter, it was a big risk they took, and it might be a risk that ends up backfiring on them. But it remains to be seen. I mean, they could go in and one of them could take the spot and run with it, but nothing has shown us. Zero things. That didn't really make sense. I thought that was going to sound better in my head. But they've shown nothing that either one of them can be a consistent starter in this league, especially going into the playoffs. And this is not a young team that's working its way up. You know, if this was a team of young guys in their early to mid-20s, then you're like, all right, well, let's see what we got here. But it's not. You've got guys in their mid to, maybe not late 30s, but in their mid 30s that are, you know, getting towards the end of their careers. And they always talk about that window is shut, which I've never really liked, because you can make a couple of moves and the window opens and closes, right? So you'd be like, oh, their window it's wide open. And then it turns out it doesn't work and they have a fire sale and the window's definitely closed. Anyways,
it's just a little latch at the top. You just got to turn it and then you can pull it up.
There you go. Yeah. But there's nothing between these two goalies that has shown us that they're the guy to be able to win and help this team produce. And like you said, if the team in front of you is not playing well, sometimes you need a goalie that can go ahead and steal something. But this team has not shown that they are capable of doing that. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of wondering in, you know, a month's time when this starts, you got a first series against Florida, let's say, and you got 7 games. Is it every other game? You're going to have Sammy 1, Vitek 2, Sammy 3, Vitek 4.
You can't do that in the playoffs, man. Like, that's just a nightmare.
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's where we're at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope they enjoy their first round exit, and then we're looking at potentially a new coaching staff next season.
I mean, last year we had Vitek, we had Sammy, and Craig Anderson. We had 3 goaltenders during that series against the Bruins. We saw how well that went.
Let's go. All right. Let's look real quick at the teams that are making the playoffs. Carolina's got a number one goalie. Rangers, like everybody know Pittsburgh, Florida, Toronto, Boston. I feel like all these teams know who their guy is. The Capitals don't, and it just shouldn't. That shouldn't be the case, right? To be fair, they were hoping one of them was going to take it and run with it. And my guess is they were hoping it was Samsonov. It's not. You know, he's good. Samsonov, when he's on, like last night, he's very good. The problem is he's the Tomas Fleischmann of goalies right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's streaky. You don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get an incredible goaltender, Holtby-esque saves, as I believe you put it, or you're going to get a backup.
Somebody on Twitter showed a shot of Sammy making a huge save against Tampa and then the save with Holtby from the Golden Knights series. And I was looking at it, I'm like, that's very Holtby-esque. I mean, it's you put them on top of each other, it's kind of the same play. So that's where I'm kind of getting that from.
I'd have to go and look, but I just feel like this offseason, depending on the coaching staff, and if they get knocked down the first round, you and I, if they even get to the first round, you know, I have my opinion in terms of what should be next. Not that I necessarily know who should be coming in. But anyways, I'd be curious to see which goaltenders are available, because I don't necessarily think that there is a goalie they would trade for in the offseason that, like, no one talked about a goalie that they would go out and be able to get in the offseason, trade-wise. Like, that same goalie would have been talked about, I would imagine, at the deadline. And maybe not, because maybe it's like, oh, you know, these teams are pushing for a playoffs and maybe that'll change. Or maybe they're starters for teams that aren't as very good that are maybe looking to rebuild a little bit, that they'll look at moving their goalie out in the offseason.
I mean, you could spend some buku bucks. This is...
No, they can't, because I don't have the cap space for it.
Well, no, just like, here's what I'm thinking. We shouldn't even be talking about this because we got playoffs and everything else ahead of us. But what if they do let both of those guys go? You do have Phoenix Copley and Zach Fucale who can be backups, and you let both of those guys go and you bring in a big name, like the biggest one that is a free agent coming up, and spend all your money there. I don't think it's a good plan, but I mean, they do have, there's a lot of depth at goaltender, but it seems like it's a lot of depth for backup goaltender.
I mean, they have backup, like you said, they have backup depth, but I don't think they have a starter. Neither of these guys has shown that they are ready to be a consistent starter. And I think if either of them has shown that they are more likely to be the starter, it's Vanecek. I'm sorry. More likely to be consistent is Vanecek. Samsonov has not shown consistency, and maybe he just needs a new environment. I don't know what the case is. But here's the other thing to look at is Samsonov's coming off a contract that has a $2 million cap hit. Vanecek is coming off one that's just over $715,000. If you're a team that needs some cap space, which one of those guys are you going to re-sign? They're a year apart in age. Birthdays are actually pretty close to each other. Samsonov's February 22nd. Vanecek is January 9th. So,
not that close. They're not sharing a cake.
No, but my I can't say what I'm thinking because, as you said, this is a family show. But... My point in that is it's not like Samsonov, everyone's, oh, he's a young goalie. I mean, he's 25. He's definitely a young goalie, but it's not like Vanecek's an old guy. He's only 26. Right. So my point being that they're not that far apart in age is you're more likely, in my mind, they're more likely to move Samsonov, which means they're not going to do it, but they're more likely to move Samsonov out because you probably get more for him in return. You re-sign Vanecek to be your backup at a cheaper rate, and then you spend some bucks on a goalie. But that's not the only thing they've got to do this offseason. I mean, they've got a couple of defensemen, Schultz and Kempney, that are going to be out of contract. You've got, I mean, Larson and Johansson, who just brought in. But those are your only forwards that you need to re-sign. You know, you'll have a couple guys, Eller, Hathaway, and Sheary, that'll be UFAs after next season that you might want to be looking at either this season, this offseason, or the next one. But you also got guys, I mean, Hathaway's 30, Eller's 32, Sheary's 29. This team needs to look at getting younger. So do you go, but how many 25, 26 year olds are, you know, top six players that are going to be available in the offseason as a free agent? This team, what's his name? McClellan's going to have a lot of work to do this offseason, especially if things don't go well the rest of this regular season or in the playoffs. Anything out of a getting out of the first round, like, I don't think this team's going to win the cup. It'd be great. But if the goalies don't play well, he's got a lot of work to do this offseason. Yeah, I'm trying to find out who are the goalies of that are at a contract that could be available this offseason. I cannot figure out how to find an all cap friendly.
It's a hot commodity, those goaltenders. Hot commodity. I do want to say that, at least for the Tampa Bay Lightning game, I did get to see my duo of Anthony Mantha and Tom Wilson back together. I think those guys have a lot of chemistry. I want to see those two paired together as much as possible. But like you brought up, we also did get to see Johan Larsson for the very first time. Very small sample size, but what have you thought of his play so far?
I mean, I like what he brings to the team. I don't think it's necessarily what they needed. So in my opinion, either the deadline was, it was going to cost a lot, and I don't know who you necessarily would have brought in. You could go back and look at what other teams did and maybe make one of those moves. But I think the fact that they weren't willing to move out draft capital and specific prospects limited their ability to bring in someone, which I get to an extent. Off season, and this, you go and you bring in a goalie, and I think you need to bring in a top six forward, and I think that's what Larsson is nice to have, and I wouldn't mind necessarily seeing him be re-signed, but do you re-sign him at the extent, like, whose spot is he taking? Right now it's Axel Janssen-Fjällby, but I think Axel's shown that he can play in the NHL and play on that fourth line and substitute on the third line and produce to an extent.
Yeah, he's got some wheels behind him.
That is true. I still think it's funny that on Cat Friendly it says he was acquired via waivers. Like, technically, yes, but not really, because he was originally drafted by them. But, sorry, that was off topic. I just think it's funny, and I always see it. I wouldn't mind Larsson necessarily coming back, but I don't know whose spot he takes. You know, he's not taking Hathaway's spot. He's got a contract next season. He's not taking Nick Dowd. Dowd got just, relatively recently re-signed during the season, sorry. And I don't want to see him replace Axel Janssen-Fjällby. Like I said, this team needs to get younger. I want to see that dude on the fourth line with Hathaway and Dowd and see what happens there. So do you re-sign him as your 13th forward? I wouldn't necessarily be against that, depending on what it costs. Like, that's not my priority going into the offseason. If I'm making a list of things to do, it's goalie, top six winger, so I can put Oshie on the third line, and then I'm looking at, actually probably defense, and then some depth in the bottom six forwards. So Larsson, I don't think is there, which means, of course, that McClellan's going to announce tomorrow that they've signed him to a two-year extension. I'd be like, what are you doing? That's the one thing that's always kind of annoyed me on McClellan, is he makes these moves, and I go, why didn't you wait? Like, nothing against Nick Dowd, but why did you feel you were so anxious to re-sign him this early? Like, you could have waited a bit. Let me look at his stats real quick, because I'd be curious to see what his face-off percentage is. 54, it's actually not that bad. I take it back. But I don't look at that and go, I need to make that move right away. You know, and maybe his agent was pushing for it, and they're like, you know what, it's not a bad deal. I mean, $1.3 million is not that bad for a fourth-line center. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe you're like, you know what, it'll be cheaper to get him now, and it goes into the off-season, he might cost a bit more. But going back to your original question, Larsson, I think it's fine. I think he went with experience over Janssen-Fjällby. And we'll see how he does. It's been a small sample size so far. He's only played two games. You know, could he come out and be 2018 Devontae Smith-Pelly? That'd be great. But I don't anticipate that being the case necessarily. I just don't see him being on the team next year. And if he is, who's he replacing?
Yeah.
You know, do you move on from Hathaway? You know, it's a like-for-like move in that case. To an extent. I mean, I don't know if Larsson really fights as much as Hathaway. Hathaway's got a lot of physicality to his game. So, I want to see more from Larsson, but I don't want, going into next season, him to take the spot of a young guy because his team needs to get younger.
It'd be interesting to see what this season, again, because it is kind of, it's a little condensed. It's still 82 games, but it's... I feel like the trade deadline didn't happen that long ago, and we're already talking about the end of the season. So Johan Larsson coming in, he was hurt, having him for two games. He's kind of behind the eight ball here. He doesn't have much time to get acclimated to the other players on the ice. Yeah, he's a veteran. He's going to understand it, but you got to learn a new system, and you got to have to realize who you've got chemistry with. So I don't know. I feel a little bit bad for the guy. This will be his first time getting into the playoffs, though, so he might be really jazzed up for that. So we'll see. But
hopefully.
Anything else we should talk about here in Caps World?
I think last little bit is the fact that we get to watch, you know, every time they play, I'll say night in, night out, but they have these weird week offs throughout the season.
Yeah.
But the fact that we have had, we've talked about this before, but that someone has worn the Capitals sweater, a team that you and I support, that I've supported since I was little. I mean, I don't know how long you supported, but we've only known each other since college. But
that's right. and but, we met because I was wearing a Boston Bruins sweater.
I do remember that. That was funny.
Yeah.
You're walking down the hallway in the basement of the building at Stevenson. You're like, who's the guy who's wearing that Bruins sweater? Get him out of here. The fact that we've had a player that is going to go down as one of the greatest players in NHL history has worn the Capitals sweater is just insane. But Ovechkin continues to set records after getting his 1,400th point. I mean, that's just insane. I don't really have anything else to say in regards to that. It's just crazy to be like, this dude has worn the Caps jersey. He's worn some really good looking ones. He's worn the blues, which are really bad, but that's besides the point.
Hey.
I will admit they're growing on me a little bit, but not enough to me to actually like them or want to get one.
I really wish they would play better in them.
Yeah, there's that too. They are bad luck and need to go away. Add the red along the shoulders, and I'm telling you, they're going to start winning in those. But if... I don't know where I was going with that. If they could play better, that'd be great. Don't wear them in the playoffs, please. But it's just
now,
crazy.
This is how we have that be the away jersey. It balances out.
No, what? No, they only play well away. Don't, like, jinx them away as well. You know what they got to do? This is going back to... I apologize for doing this again. It was one of my favorite shows. I was going back to Ted Lasso, but they had a thing where they had to get rid of some bad, not vibes, but a situation regarding
a bad juju.
Yeah, but not really, because it wasn't like they were playing poorly. It was to get rid of a alleged ghost kind of thing, but it made sense. Anyways, they set up this thing where they all had to go and they had to burn something that mattered to them as a way of a sacrifice, essentially, to this situation. That's what the Caps need to do. They need to go, and they all need to burn those blue jerseys, and that will cause them to play better throughout the rest of the season. You get rid of this evil hanging over the team in these blue jerseys, and they will play. I'm telling you, burn the blue jerseys, and they're going to win the cup.
I like the blue jerseys. I don't want them to burn them.
It's just crazy that Ovechkin plays for this team. You know, I mean, they've had some very good players in the history of this franchise. You know, Scott Stevens, Rod Langway, Peter Pondra, Olaf Kolzig, Jagr was here for a little while. I mean, he's been an amazing Hall of Fame, obviously, talent, just not with the Capitals. But to have someone that is arguably on the Mount Rushmore of NHL players, it's just insane.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, Joe Snively, who is a part of this team, probably isn't playing hockey if Ovechkin is not the guy here. Let's be honest about that. So it's insane the things that he does. And of course, when he makes that 1,400th point, it's on a goal, of course. It's not going to be on a pass, or it's not going to be on an assist or something like that. It's with that classic Ovi goal that we've seen for so long. And I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to talk about in five years when he's gone about what happens next. But it's going to be a giant OV-shaped hole in all of our hearts when he leaves, because we're not going to know what to do with ourselves or what this team is going to be able to do without him.
I mean, like you said, it's going to be kind of fun to watch to see what they can do next. Because it's kind of fun to see some young guys, but, you know, we need to enjoy it while it lasts, because pretty soon it's going to be on to the... And we've seen this before. We saw that with, you know, the fire sale of 2004 when, you know, they moved out Bondra and Jagr and all those guys. And, you know, not that they're going to have a fire sale again, but at some point you have to move on to the next, which is why I think they weren't willing to move out McMichael or LaPierre.
Now, this is way, 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 way into the future, but here in Baltimore, we have two statues at Ravens Stadium. Johnny Unitas, because he was a Baltimore Colt Indy. He's not yours. Leave him alone. and Ray Lewis outside the stadium? Does Ovechkin get a statue outside of Capital One when he leaves?
I'd say no, but that's because they don't have any outside the stadium. I think that there's something.
Well, there hasn't really there hasn't been a player worth putting a statue up. Ovechkin brought the cup to DC. Now, where they put it, like, are they going to block the Metro?
No, I don't think they put a statue up because I just don't think this team puts a statue up outside of the arena because it just, first of all, it wouldn't really fit with the city. And they've had plenty of players that would deserve recognition.
Yeah, that's why you put banners up there.
Oh, exactly. And I think that's, I think you see more, I feel like if the was more of like the US Air, or sorry, Capital One, not Capital One, Capital Center, where it kind of was out and, you know, more open space than the other parking lot, and you actually have like room to put statues, then I think you could see something like that. But I don't, I think that he's a pretty quick jersey number retirement. You know, I don't know why we don't have Bondra or Colsey yet, but I think he's definitely, his number's going up in the rafters, him and Backstrom. And I think this team needs to have a like Ring of Honor thing for players that aren't having their number retired, but they had, you know, they've contributed a lot to the team, and that needs to go around the arena. You know, you can do it not just with the Caps, you can do it with the Wizards and the Mystics, and I guess it's really only three teams that play there, the Hoyas. But you,
Mystics don't even play there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Hey, they are. You know, they at least win stuff as opposed to the Wizards.
They win stuff there. They just don't play there.
Yeah. But I think they need to have some sort of, I would feel like they'd have more of like a statue kind of thing out in the concourse. And I actually think that would be a little bit on like on the lower level. I think you could have something cool like that. I mean, they have that stuff kind of around it in the concourse where it's sort of that space between before you go down the various hallways to go out to the rink.
Right.
That, I think they'll likely have some sort of like Ovechkin display that will stay up permanently throughout. And I think that might be more of a thing that we'll see. And it should be out of section 108.
I can see
that.
That
would make sense.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm going to petition that they put up a statue of Ovi and Backy holding up the Stanley Cup together. It's an iconic moment. Find a park.
I wonder if there's like city regulations that make you can't do that.
I mean, find a park. Ted Leonsis will buy it. Put a statue up there. It's fine.
If he can buy a park, can he buy the football team?
Please, yeah, go ahead. Is that it for Caps World this week?
I think so, man.
All right. Well, hey, hopefully we'll get to see some good games. We got the Penguins, the Bruins coming up this weekend, back to back. Hey, did you hear this on, before we get out of here, we'll talk about it at the end of the show, of course, but John Walton brought this up. The next like four games are all nationally televised games. There's no local broadcast until like 2 weeks from now.
Oh, well, because that's always gone so well for this team.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah, guys.
I was like, that's kind of a wild schedule. They're going to be in the national spotlight for a week straight. So it'll be interesting to see. So that's it for what's going on in Caps World. Now let's go down on the farm. All right, everybody, here we go. We're going down on the farm. We are talking Hershey Bears and South Carolina Stingrays. Coach Dan, what's going on down on the farm?
Well, let's start in Hershey, where the Bears went 1-2 with an overtime win over Bridgeport, but two losses to Charlotte. They're currently fourth in the Atlantic with 71 points, 10 back of first place Springfield. They'll be back at it on Friday in Lehigh Valley before hosting Springfield on Saturday and Sunday at the Giant Center. Two other bits of Bears news, as the team had an early morning historic win on Tuesday against Bridgeport. The Bears became the first AHL franchise to win 3,000 games and the fifth franchise in hockey history to reach that milestone. So congratulations to them. That is a affiliation that I would love to continue forever between the Bears and the Caps.
Yeah, I think that should never, ever change.
The only reason it should change is if they get an AHL team in Baltimore.
Which they won't.
So let's keep pushing for that ECHL team. The Bears also announced that they have signed goalie Clay Stevenson, who recently signed a 2-year deal with the Caps that starts next season. They signed him to an amateur tryout agreement, so maybe he'll get a little bit of ice time. My guess, he'll just get to practice with the team, which will be good experience for him. Down in South Carolina, the Stingrays went 3-0 with 2 wins over Orlando and 1 over Jacksonville. They're on a nice little 5-game winning streak and have won 7 of their last 10.
Whoa.
Even with that, they're still stuck in 6th in the South Division with 58 points, 30 back of 1st place Florida, but they're only 9 back of 5th place Greenville. Now, they have 4 games remaining this season as they were eliminated from playoff contention for just the 2nd time in their 29-year history.
Wow.
They've got back-to-back games at the North Charleston Coliseum against Florida starting on Friday. They then wrap up their season in Norfolk, where they will take on the Admirals on Wednesday and next Friday. That's what's going on down on the farm.
Well, hopefully South Carolina Stingrays next year be a little bit better of a season. They just got themselves a new coach. Maybe the Capitals can actually give them some prospects to play there as well. We shall see. But go Bears, go Stingrays. Now let's go around the NHL and beyond. All right, everybody, there's plenty of stuff going on around the NHL and beyond. Coach Dan is going to catch us up. So, Coach Dan, what is happening around the NHL and beyond?
Well, let's start in Anaheim, where Ryan Getzlaf announced that he will be retiring at the end of the season. Getzlaf has played 17 seasons, all of them with Anaheim, and has been the captain of the Ducks for the past 11 years. Hockey Hall of Famer Marian Hossa signed a one-day contract with Chicago to retire as a Blackhawk. He hasn't played since 2017 after being diagnosed with a skin disorder. And during his career, he won 3 Stanley Cups and was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame this past November. San Jose announced that Doug Wilson will be stepping down as general manager of the Sharks after the season. He spent the last 19 years as their GM, starting with the team during the 2003 season. And while he was their GM, only Pittsburgh and Boston won more regular season games and got more points than the Sharks. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next with him. Arizona's Nick Ritchie was suspended for 1 game for slashing Brandon's most favorite player of all time, Anaheim's Kevin Shattenkirk.
Legend!
Buffalo made some unfortunate headlines as they have now set the record for most seasons in a row without making the playoffs, as they have now been eliminated from playoff contention. It has been 11 years since the Sabres got to play for Lord Stanley's Cup. Philadelphia and the NHL's version of the Iron Man, Keith Yandel, was a healthy scratch for the first time in 989 games on April 2nd, ending his streak. Flyers really couldn't have gotten him 11 more games to get to 1,000. I mean, really? It wasn't like he was injured. If he asked to be taken out of the lineup, fine. But come on now. That would have been a nice number to get to. Yeah. And this week, the NHL announced the 3 finalists for the Willie O'Ree Community Hero Award. The 3 finalists are Meredith Lang from Minnesota for her work in introducing young girls of color to learn and play hockey. Ryan Francis of Nova Scotia for helping launch the Indigenous Girls Hockey Program of Nova Scotia. And Noel Acton from Brandon's hometown of Baltimore, who is the founder and executive director of Tenderbridge, a nonprofit that has supported more than 500 kids in East Baltimore and runs the Baltimore Banners hockey team. Go to NHL.com/O'Ree Award through April 17th to vote. And finally, let's check in some collegiate hockey news as the 2022 NCAA Men's Frozen Four is set to take place in Boston beginning today, that being Thursday. Michigan, Minnesota, Denver, and Minnesota State are the 4 teams competing, with Minnesota State playing in just its 2nd Frozen Four after making it last season. The national championship game is scheduled for Saturday, April 9th at 8 p.m., and you can catch that game on ESPN2. That's the news from the past week in the NHL and beyond!
I also got to say, man, how come you did not bring up Jay Beagle in your NHL news?
Dude, we both write the notes. Don't throw me under the bus. Because honestly, I didn't really think much of it. Like, this kind of thing happens all the time. The only reason that we're talking about it is because you used to play for the Caps.
Well, I mean, You know, we love the Beegs, but I don't know him going after that guy. I mean, that was kind of crazy after the play and everything. And Beagle's never been a guy I've thought of as like a guy that'll take you down. Like, I've never seen him that aggressive before.
I mean, he was I don't know if I would go so far to say he was aggressive when he was with the Caps, but he was a physical player. But I think he's now a veteran guy on a team that, one, is not very good. And there's a lot of, not turmoil, but a lot of noise going on around that team that doesn't need to be the case. It has nothing to do with the players on that roster or the coaching staff. And it's got to be a bit of a tough situation to be in. So he felt like he was getting shown up by a couple of good, very young players. Not he, the team was getting shown up, and he decided to do something about it. And, you know, if he defended himself in terms of his actions, not on the ice, because he was definitely the instigator in that, physical instigator in that situation. So I feel like this is one of those things that if you're on the opposing team, you're pretty upset about it. And if you're four on his team, you're like, you know what? He did what he had to do.
Well, is that the show for this week?
I think so, man.
All right. Well, hey, if you want to continue the conversation with Coach Dan or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. Coach Dan, where can people tweet to you at?
You can find me on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan, talking all kinds of things related to the Washington Capitals, Arsenal Football Club, and how they played like garbage earlier in this week and they need the freaking points. Moving on, talking about the Bills, the Commanders, who, it's not their fault, but can we just get rid of Snyder?
Hey,
like, I'm not saying that getting rid of him, they're suddenly going to win the Super Bowl, but it's like one thing after another with this team. I was just kind of making fun of the Coyotes for the fact that they had these issues and they're playing in this, like, you know, probably very nice but small collegiate arena next season. And for an NHL franchise, for the top league in the world, you have a top amount of fans you can have in your stadium that you're renting is like 5,000. That's embarrassing. And that's dramatic. But that shouldn't be the case for a team that is a professional team, right? Somehow, the Commanders right now, to me, in my mind, are the most embarrassing franchise in professional sports right now.
Yeah.
And jeez, it's only because of the owner, right? Like, let's say Leonsis owns this team and they're just not very good because it didn't work out, and the moves they make just didn't work. And even with like the botching of the, which I don't think is Snyder's fault, the botching of the team name, like someone couldn't go to, you know, Five Below or the dollar store and get a really big sheet to hang over the freaking name. So some guy in a helicopter couldn't zoom in on his iPhone. I feel like at that point people are like, well, that's just silly. Like, it's not that big of a deal, but it's just one thing after another. And the problems with this team, that has nothing to do with the players, or the playing staff, or the coaches. It's because of Snyder. It's because he's just a bad person. And that everything that's being said about him, with the fact that they are, you know, alleged to have kept money that was supposed to be shared with visiting teams, that he continuously harasses women and allows for a toxic work environment in the organization that he runs. I don't understand, one, why the NFL is protecting him. What does he have on the rest of the league?
Yeah.
The league has shown that they will get rid of owners that are bad for business. They did it in Carolina. Dan Snyder is bad for business. This is a market in the DC area that is craving for a good football team. They're not the number one. They're not. No, you're missing the point, buddy. First of all, traffic in this area sucks. So you're not getting anybody from Northern Virginia. You're not getting anybody probably from the district in terms of coming out to a game. They have to leave early, leave work if it's a Monday or a Thursday game. But a good football team in the DC area is the number one team in the DC area, no matter how good the Caps are, no matter how good the Nationals are. This is a city that is all and a surrounding area that is craving for a good football team based out of the district. The NFL financially will be, not that they're not in a bad situation now, but will be even better situation with a good team based out of DC. So I don't, and that may not be the case with a different owner who's not a schmuck, but The reality is Snyder is bad for business, and I don't understand why the NFL is still protecting him. I don't get it. Look at the Cowboys. They suck. They can't get out of the, they get in the playoffs and they lose the first game all the time. But it's good for business that they're a good team. It's good for business for the NFL to have good teams. And having Snyder and the Commanders constantly in the headlines for dumb crap is bad for business. They have every right to kick him out at this point. But they're not doing it, and I don't get it. But somehow that's finding me on Twitter at WTP Coach Dan. But hey, if you've enjoyed this show, go ahead and check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/whatthebookpod. It's where we post when new shows are coming out, as well as all sorts of things related to the Capitals, the Bears, the Stingrays, the Cubs from time to time, that being the Hershey, not Chicago. That's facebook.com/whatthebookpod. But hey, I was just making a plea for the NFL to do something about Dan Snyder and the Washington Commanders. You talked about how fans in this area can go ahead and switch allegiances to a team based out of Baltimore. The team that you might follow. Is there a podcast they should listen to if they're interested? Not that I am supporting switching allegiances, even though I now follow the Bills and have been for the last few seasons. My dad's from outside Buffalo. It's not like I just latched onto a winning team. I started following the team with Nathan Peterman. Remember, this is his freaking last name. He sucks, and he was their starting quarterback. I'm not jumping on a bandwagon. Stephon Diggs, great new deal. Love it. It's from this area. If there's a podcast you should listen to regarding the Baltimore Ravens, Brandon, tell them about it.
You can listen to my Baltimore Ravens podcast called The Call. Me and my buddy Josh talk all things Baltimore Ravens. The draft is coming up. It is at the end of this month, so we'll be coming back soon with some Ravens content. We've been trying to do it, actually, the last couple weeks, and we're both really busy. So we'll get to you once the draft is around. Now, this show here we do for free. And you listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Facebook, and YouTube. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us an Apple Podcast review, and then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat and Twitch and TikTok, anywhere you're social on the web or with your phone. Say, I'm a Washington Capitals fan. I listen to What the Puck, and you should too. Let's go over the games until we talk again. On Saturday, April 9th, the Capitals have a 3 p.m., an afternoon game in Pittsburgh up against those pesky Penguins. That game you can watch on ESPN Plus or on broadcast television ABC. And then on Sunday, the Caps travel home back to D.C. to go up against the Boston Bruins. That game is at 1:30 in the afternoon, and that game is nationally on TNT. And then on Tuesday, April 12th, the Capitals still in D.C. welcome the Philadelphia Flyers to town. That game is at 7 o'clock, and you can watch that one on regular old ESPN. So three nationally televised games, three East Conference opponents, two potentially that you can meet in the playoffs. It's going to be a fun week to cover these boys. Hopefully they can keep that fire that they've had underneath them, that they had against Tampa Bay. Hopefully they can keep that fire going. In this week coming up, lots of hockey to watch. We'll be right back here with you, everybody, discussing potentially three wins next week. Let's see how it goes. All right, so let's look at that back-to-back, Coach. Last word here. Penguins, Bruins. Who's your starting goaltender for those games? Who and who?
Ooh, hang on. I got to bring the schedule because I got to see what's coming next. Vanecek on the road, Samsonov at home.
So you got Sammy against Boston. You got Vitek against the Penguins. Okay. All right, so just for fun, I'll reverse it, and I'll say they're going with the hot hand. They're going with Sammy on Saturday.
Oh, that's a good point. Maybe, gotta, yeah, Samsonov in Pittsburgh.
And they can't switch it now. I already said it. You can't switch it.
No, because now I'm thinking maybe they go with Vanecek, Boston, and Philly at home. But I still wonder if you do Vanecek on the road because he's shown to be more stable in a hostile environment. I don't even know if that's true. I'm going with you. I'm going, you stay with the hot hand, you go with Samsonov because he played so well, you give him another opportunity. Except I feel like that last goal he gave it to Tampa, he should have done a better job, but that's besides the point.
Yeah, it was, still not perfect. It's not a perfect game from either of these guys. But all right, so we're both saying Sammy on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
All right. Well, everybody, that's it for the show this week. Everybody, say it loud, say it proud. Let's go, Caps.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.